This is Twit.
Lori, you've only had it for a day.
No, I just got it about 20 minutes before joining the show.
Give us the initial feeling.
I'll tell you, I haven't even turned them on yet. That's how just out of the box they are. But let me give you a quick hit on just my literal first impression. So this won't count for the review because I will have had it for a few days and I'll have a little bit more experience. But right out of the box, heavier than I expected, heavier than the iPhone 11 Pro. Also a tiny, tiny bit taller than the iPhone 11 Pro. It sticks out just a tiny bit more, but not even a quarter of an inch.
Okay.
So they're called the same size, but it's actually just a teeny. I think it has to do with the design. So the round, instead of having the rounded edges, they're flat, and that probably just kind of, you know, if you take something curved and flatten it out.
This is the iPhone 5 flat edge, right? I'm kind of excited that this is back. I like this.
Yes.
Does it feel good in your hand? It's not that slippery
kind
of bar of soap feeling anymore, right?
It feels so good in the hands. Just picking the two phone, 11 Pro versus 12, I feel like I'm going to drop this. Just like you said, the slippery soap feeling. I don't feel that at all when I pick up the 12. And the 12 Pro, same way. 12 Pro, slightly heavier than 12, but almost not noticeable.
The difference between the mini and the Max is almost 50%, like 50% heavier and 50% bigger. I mean, the mini is really small. Now, you like a small phone. You haven't got the mini yet.
I can't wait for the mini. Yeah. I was just swooning when I saw that. It's so cute.
It's actually smaller than the current SE, isn't it?
Yes, it's smaller than the current SE, and it's only a very small, very, very small amount larger than the original iPhone SE. Based on somebody posted on Twitter, they did a sketch drawing of their estimate of the size differences between them and the original SE versus, so the 4-inch iPhone factor versus this current 12 mini. It's a little bit more than maybe a third of an inch thicker, wider, and then, you know, a half an inch or so taller.
This is the image from MacRumors.com where they put all of the iPhones kind of in a row. And this is the mini, in the beautiful blue one, and that's the SE. So he's a little bit bigger.
A little bit taller. But what you don't see from that angle, though, is how it's almost just as narrow. It's only a little tiny bit wider, which that is for those of us who want a phone that we can hold in one hand. That's the key, is the phone that is really easy to hold in one hand. And that's what the iPhone, the original SE, the 4-inch form factor, that's why it was so great. We can hold it in one hand. And that's what we're looking at with this iPhone 12 mini.
And you're not giving up anything. I mean, the same guts as the iPhone 12 or even the Pro. You're getting one less camera lens than the Pro. You're getting a little less RAM. Apple doesn't talk, as you said, Renee, they don't talk about specs to their credit, I guess. But people do want
to know.
Well,
the specs they can't win, they don't talk about. Yeah, they talk about the specs where they're ahead.
Yeah, because Android phones, you know, like this Samsung Edge, I think has 12 gigabytes of RAM.
It's hard to explain because it's a native language. It's not interpreted. There's no garbage collection. Yeah. It's written exactly for the hardware, so there's no.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's hard to explain that.
So the two less expensive ones have 4 gigs according to Xcode, where the emulators will tell you, and the pros have 6 gigs of RAM, I think is what they said. So Renee, how long have you had yours?
About a week.
Okay, so you have a little bit better idea of things like battery life.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm living the tester lifestyle, so I'm not doing anything approaching what a normal human would do with them.
Yeah, we can't. You never can really judge the battery life for the first few weeks anyway, because you're installing stuff and you're doing stuff.
And it's a brand new battery. Like, it's got so many mitigations one way or another. You have to wait. That's why I usually do a battery review in my 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later review.
Andy, is it enough to trust Apple's numbers? Because they do I don't think they lie like other companies do with their battery life numbers.
Yeah, they're pretty trustworthy, but it's always a case of your mileage will vary. I still don't know who watches video over Wi-Fi nonstop on a phone without interruption.
15 hours versus 17 hours, like, okay.
Except the tester.
Yeah, 20 hours on the Mac. Yeah.
It's most useful, I think, as a relative thing between two models. Yeah. If you're deciding between, am I going to, the Pro Max has larger batteries. What's that translate to? Okay, a little bit more life, not much more life.
I worry, though, that one of the things that classically will make your experience different than anybody else is how distant the cell towers are, how much roaming you have to do, that kind of thing. That can kill batteries, so it doesn't matter. And I wonder if 5G is going to complicate this as well. Sounds like they're doing a lot to keep 5G from hitting battery life. But if you're near-ish a 5G tower, that may really change what your experience from the same exact location last time.
And that happens with 4G anyway.
Right.
And with the smart adjustment for 5G versus LTE, I think that's exactly what Apple's trying to do there is, you know, your phone, you probably will experience a little bit of a battery drain if you happen to be close to a 5G tower, especially a 5mm wave tower. But that's where Apple's got this little smart feature that's going to try to make it so that you're not always pinging the 5G tower. You're pinging the 4G or the LTE tower when it's just for streaming music or something like that. So maybe it won't have a significant effect. You know, I think we're just going to have use cases. But really, it doesn't matter if Apple says something like, you know, 17 hours of playback, because that's not what people do every day, just like Andy had said. It's really just a matter of, will my phone last all day? Will my phone last more than a day? That's what most people want to know. They want to know that they don't have to throw it on the charger in the middle of the day.
The Verge gave Dieter Bone the 12 and Nilay Patel the 12 Pro. Both came back saying battery life was inferior to the iPhone 11s. Has that been your experience, Renee?
Mine's been about the same, but I don't have to contend with millimeter wave, which in my understanding is that's the biggest impact on battery life. And especially if you're hunting for it, like if Nilay's in downtown New York and Dieter's in San Francisco trying to hunt down the elusive millimeter wave, I can see that making a big impact.
Yeah. All right, Andy, this is the real one. This to me, anyway, maybe to me and Andy, but this to me is the real nut of the matter. Is it comes down to cameras. Perfectly good cameras on the Mini and the 12. The Pro has one more lens. It's a three-lens system. And Apple weirdly call it, and I think Gruber called this out, calls ultra-wide, wide, and telephoto, when most people would say, well, there's wide, normal, and telephoto. But the really big difference, and I don't know if Apple mentioned it, but I don't know if it was clear to everybody, the biggest difference is not between the Mini and the Pro. It's between the Pro and the Pro Max.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They made two very, very basic changes improving the camera system on the 12 Pro. First and foremost, it's got a wider aperture, so it lets in more light. So all the tricks that every other camera phone uses to sort of get around the fact that it's not a very fast lens, a lot of that becomes moot because it just simply will let in more light. The second thing is that it actually uses a larger sensor, so still 12 megapixels, but each pixel in that sensor is bigger. So the data it's taking in is much, much better.
So that's the difference between the Max and the Pro and the Pro Max, is the Max actually has it's the only one of the four that has the bigger sensor, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
The third thing is, and this is, I don't know, this is me like being excited about technology as opposed to being excited about things that Apple has actually said. But another difference between the two is that whereas the 12 Pro has the same sort of optical image stabilization as all the rest, where, you know, it corrects for your hand shaking by moving like the entire assembly, the Pro Max has a sensor shift, so it's actually just moving the sensor, which is something that most of the Pro cameras, that's how they do image stabilization. That's really, really cool because it's actually a little bit better way of doing image stabilization. It also, and this is again me speculating, but this is also a technique that a lot of the Pro cameras use to give you like a special like 50 megapixel landscape mode that if a camera is locked down, like on my Olympus OMD EM1 Micro Four Thirds camera, if it's on a tripod, you're going to engage the special mode where it takes a little bit longer to take the picture, but what it's doing is it takes the first picture. Oh god,
it's called pixel shift.
Well, there it is. I knew I had like post-it notes plenty here. So what it does is imagine like this is like one pixel, and then it'll take one image, and then it'll like actually shift the sensor a little bit so that now the pixels are like a little bit to the left, and so now it's capturing data that was between two pixels, and they'll shift a little bit more upward, so now it's capturing data that was between on the horizontal gaps too, and you wind up with a legitimate super high resolution picture. Now I don't know that that's something that Apple is even thinking about, but
it has that capability. It's
a standard technique. It's well known. I'm sure that someone, like I said last week, if I were an engineer working in the camera department, and I had access to the magic iPhone that I can program to do whatever I want, I would be doing that for my own camera.
Immediately. Right. Yeah. 47% larger sensor on the Max than the Pro. So this is a difference between the Pro and the Pro Max. Very important. 1.7. We talked about this last week too. 1.7 micrometer pixels. That, so in effect, with a wider aperture, a larger sensor, you're gathering more light, so low light should get better. And with the optical image stabilization, it's estimated you should be able to handhold a 2-second exposure. So you're going to be able to do low light photography probably better than you could do with a DSLR, given the computational capabilities added on top of that.
Yeah. It remains to be seen, but I can't wait to see it, because this is something where, as an Android, I keep one foot in Android, one foot in iPhone. This is the sort of thing that, God, if this really is as big a leap forward as it could be, this could get me to switch back, and not only switch back, but also buy like the most expensive phone in the line, because computational photography is the thing that is leveling all boats at this point. Where even the current generation Google phones use a 2 or 3 year old sensor, because their philosophy is,
it ain't the glass.
The engineers are saying that, look, there hasn't been a huge advance in sensor technology. Pixels are still as good as they've ever been. Now it's all about how well do you interpret that data and turn it into a usable picture. But so it would be very, very rare to have a camera system that is actually, they've done so much work to give advantages to it, that it would be almost like having like the $700 mid-range camera, but also having like a $600 pocket camera with you at all times. That is very, very intriguing to me.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
And actually, Google is kind of looks like they've kind of seeded this ground a little bit, because the Pixel 5, they took out the image processing chip. I feel like they're kind of saying, yeah, fine, go ahead, Apple.
Well, I will say the wait for next year, because remember that last year the month before they released the Pixel 4, Chris Osterloh, the head of the hardware department, basically put the whole team together and said, I'm very, very disappointed in the Pixel 4 we're about to introduce. I can't believe the battery is so low. I can't believe this, that, and the other. So I think we all knew that the Pixel 5 was going to be sort of a rebuilding year. But nonetheless, the Pixel 6, they will have a lot to answer to.
They've also lost Mark Lavoie, their wizard. Yeah, exactly. He went to a
break. Yeah, they took away his telephoto camera.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have the Max, Renee, but you have at least had a chance to take some pictures.
Yes.
All the phones, all of them, even Lori's Mini, have night mode, have deep vision, or deep fusion, I mean. And like last year, where deep fusion came out later, Apple Pro Raw, I think, is going to come out later. That's to me, a very interesting format, because theoretically, when you shoot Raw, you're not doing any processing at all. You're getting the sensor image. And on these sensors, they're not great sensors. You're getting just the raw sensor data. So what Apple's done is they're taking the raw sensor data and then layering in the deep fusion and other computational features so that you can work with all of that in a raw format. Yeah. That, to me, combined with the hardware, and the computational capabilities. You know, Apple did not leave out the image processing in this. They have so many.
This they chip amped it up.
Has so many transistors, 11.8 billion transistors, 6 cores, 4 GPUs, and machine learning, and an image processing core. They have so much overhead in the hardware.
And it seems to have a controller that lets it loop in real time. That's the thing. Like, a lot of reviews I'm seeing lately are like, oh, you don't need really big silicon. Don't worry about it. The phone scrolls fine. And I'm like, oh, you made scrolling the high bar. But like, just being able to do all this stuff in real time, and it loops through the image signal processor, dispatches to not just the neural engine, but the ML accelerators through the GPU, and then back by the time that photo pops up in your thumbnail, which is instant. And you can see everything. Like you on the viewfinder, you see the depth effect, you see the deep fusion, you just see all of, you see what you're going to shoot. And that to me is so, because a lot of times like, oh, the ear doesn't look great. I'll move a little bit and it fixes it. I don't have to go and look and wait a few seconds and watch it process and then go back and redo it. And it, these cameras are a lot of fun, like especially in the lower light.
Do you notice the speed difference?
Yes, the speed is really like at the higher computational modes were starting to take a second on the iPhone 11, which was remarkable because that chip was super fast. But here it's just like you take the photo, it goes whoomp, and it's done by the time you physically press on it. The only thing you notice is when you hit on an HDR video, it takes a second to ramp the display up to 1200 nits. But that's the only thing you notice about
the Apple has taken some heat for not having 90 hertz or 120 hertz refresh rates on its screen. I don't think that's, I mean, I have phones that theoretically have 120. My Pixel 4 has 90.
They'll do it next year when they can get through dynamic panels.
When you're scrolling through Reddit, if you do this or on a web page, then you might notice a little difference.
No, Leo, it's not that. It's because 120 divides into 24 frames per second so that we can watch our Hollywood movies in the frame rate that nature and Hollywood intended.
Oh.
That's the real advantage of adaptive frame rate.
I had no idea. Okay.
That's what you can
you
do
want
on
it
an
to
iPad.
Be really
That's
high the reason I really so like it on the iPad. You can watch it really low.
Yeah. I had no idea that was what we were going for. Do you miss it though on the phone?
I like it, but it's the simple answer is that Apple is using the OLED technology from the Galaxy S20, which is not adaptive. It's you can manually switch the frame rate, but when you do that, like Samsung chooses to lower the resolution and change the white point.
That's right.
And that would make Apple's eyes bleed. The panels in the Note 20 are adaptive. They use LTPO. Apparently, if you put oxide in anything, it makes it adaptive because what they had to put into the iPad panels too. But Samsung cannot make enough for an iPhone order yet, but they should be able to by next year. And that's important because if you just go to 120 hertz, it will deplete your battery like you're on millimeter wave the whole time.
Right.
So what the iPad does and what Apple does is they alternate. They spike you to 120 when you're doing something that needs it, and then they drop you down to 48. Which is lower than 60, and that recoups some battery. So it balances out the power draw, and I think that's what they're waiting for the iPhone.
Okay. By the way, the Pro Raw is the Pro models only, and that's coming later this year. We should mention that 14.1 did come out today for iOS and iPadOS, which is the iPhone release version and has some widget fixes and so forth. But
we should add that the only reason some of the features are pro only, I mean, well, they're pro, but there was extra 2 gigabytes of RAM. It's 1.5 times the amount of RAM, so it is easier to handle Pro Raw. It can also do 4K 60 for Dolby Vision instead of 4K 30 because it's a RAM intensive application. So it's those little things that extra RAM enables.
Okay.